Good evening and welcome to this week's worldwide broadcast of The Joyner Report. Now here's your host, Angela Joyner.
Thanks for being here for tonight's Joyner Report on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network and at UPRN 105.5 FM New Orleans. I'd like to remind you, you can also listen on your cell phone by dialing 704-631-4060 and entering the station ID code of 2899. If you would like, join us in the virtual auditorium through PalTalk. It's a free download, and we've already got a lot of people in the chat room, so it looks like it's going to be a fun night there. Tonight's guest is Nancy Talbot. This is the second time she's been on my show, and I suspect that she's going to come back several more times. So for those of you that have been sending me questions that you would like answered, just know that we probably won't get to all of them tonight. She has turned out to be a very popular guest, and I've gotten a lot of feedback on the last show, and just realize that she will come back. She's already agreed to come back, so if we don't get to your question tonight, don't get upset, because we will get to it sooner or later. And now I would like to welcome Nancy, and I'd like to ask her to tell us a few things about herself.
Hi, Angela, and thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I recognize that this Robert Vandenbroucke case is close to unbelievable for people who don't know him and who haven't had the experiences that I and a number of other people now have had, I want to make just a few statements before we get into talking about this new report. First of all, I want to point out that my basic interest from the get-go, this is back in 1990, is crop circles. So, you know, what's going on with the crop circles.
Right.
And in particular, from the scientific point of view, for the first 10 years of my involvement, that's what we did. We were looking at the plants and soils, looking for changes in them from a totally scientific point of view. I'm one of the few people in the anomalous phenomena arena who am a co-author on a peer-reviewed paper, a scientific paper. This means that a group of scientists who did not know me or William Levengood, the other author, evaluated the paper based on its merits and decided that it was worthy of being published. This is not something that happens every day.
Right.
I also wanted to point out that I have put a huge sum of my own funds into getting this work done. Many people find Robert's case so unbelievable, and I say to them, well, why would I risk the reputation that I already have? I'm not doing it for money. I don't sell anything. It's not because I like to travel. I already travel as much as I can stand to travel. And certainly it isn't for notoriety or fame. People already know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because his case is so unusual and so very difficult, it's hard for me to grasp it, frankly, and I'm right in the middle of it. And therefore I know it's very hard for other people. I think that it's important to remind people that if one is going to be truthful, and the people who have been following my work all these years expect me to tell them the truth, that real science demands that you tell all of the truth, not that you withhold, you know, bits and pieces that you think the public can't handle. That's partly what's wrong in our country, I think, with this whole UFO thing, you know. People decide somebody else can't handle it, and they don't tell them what they know. So, even though I have trouble myself wrapping my head around much of this, it's my job to, if I'm going to meet the standards that we've set already, that I present the data I have as straightforwardly as I can, with as much detail as I can, and allow the listener to do with that information whatever they see fit.
So you kind of put it in their laps to...
Well, they have to help us, all of us, figure out what's going on. I sure as heck don't know. I also wanted to make sure people know that Robert himself is not interested in money. His father is and needs to be because Robert is totally indifferent to it. Robert is very intelligent and also is well aware that fame is a totally superficial thing and he's not interested in that either. He is, just like you and me, human, however, and like anybody else, he thoroughly enjoys experiencing the affection and the admiration of other people. I mean, he's absolutely normal.
Mm-hmm.
But he only wants that affection and that admiration in the context of the people who are offering it actually opening up their hearts and their minds to listen to what he says, to what he believes to be the truth, as best he knows it. That's what he feels his job is. That's what he's trying to do. It doesn't mean that he's right. I don't know whether he's right. But I know that he's totally sincere, and what he wishes is that people listen to his the current knowings that he has, and then again, of course, evaluate them for themselves. He believes that these events that are going on around him are of a spiritual nature and that the intent behind it all of these dramatic photos and other amazing things that go on, is to help the general public, in his case mostly in Holland, but through me elsewhere, to help the public recognize that this spiritual reality exists and it is present right now. So, that being said, where do we go from there?
It is a lot to swallow. It's a lot to take in. I've been reading your site this all this last week, actually.
Well,
and let's tell people what that site is in case they would like to go and look at these photos.
Oh, absolutely. It's bltresearch.com. That's the major site. And on that site, you will see a section for the Van den Broeke case. To just get to it, you simply add a forward slash and the word Robert, spelled R-O-B-B-E-R-T. And then forward slash after that, ufophotos.php. So the whole URL is bltresearch.com/Robert, with two B's, /ufophotos.php. And that's the one we're going to be talking about mostly tonight.
Okay. So I just wanted to get that cleared up. So if anybody's listening and would like to look at the photos while we're talking, that probably would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think it might be. Now, I know, Angela, that you are a reporter and a competent reporter, and that you have been getting a number of questions having to do with a photo that was released to the public in Holland years ago, that I am perfectly happy to deal with at some point in the future, but you had a question or two you wanted to ask me about that before.
We've been, I don't know if you realize, but I do have a board at Open Minds Forum, and it's called the Joiner Report Board, and people there know who my guests are going to be, and often will submit questions. We'll ask so-and-so this or ask so-and-so that. So there's been a lot of posts made this week since you were coming back. And one of the posts was of the Mudman picture. Someone believes Robert hoaxed that photo with a cutout. And I just wanted to see, you know, what you knew of that.
Okay. I know all about this particular incident. And unfortunately, the public has been very inadequately informed, as is almost always the case with Robert. The photo was released some years ago by Robert's father, and the papers were not told that this photo of a mudman, it represents a New Guinea shaman, that photo was only one of many Mudman photos that began to appear on Robert's camera at that time. Robert had never heard of a New Guinea shaman, had no idea what the images represented, but when his father chose one and put it out, probably because it was the clearest, he didn't bother to tell anybody that it was only one of many, and the debunking contingent in Holland immediately jumped on this and attacked with every gun blazing, with the idea of trying to prove that Robert was a faker. The debunkers in Holland are having a very rough time, as you can guess, with Robert. And what they did was they went on the internet, apparently, and found a Reader's Digest photograph that had been published at some time previously, in which there was a group of mudmen, these New Guinea shaman, one of which looked very much like the photograph that Robert's father had released.
Yes, it did look similar.
Yeah, they immediately jumped to the conclusion that Robert had Googled this himself, had found the image, and then either had done something through the computer to get it on his camera, or had made a cutout and held it in front of his camera, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they then ascertained and claimed to the heavens that this was the fact, you see. Well, they don't know that there are a whole bunch of others, that they're all different shapes, nor did they do very careful work. What I have done, and in the next report that is coming out, and this will be when I will deal with this in depth, we have the advantage of an MIT-trained image enhancement specialist who has been working on many photographs taken by Robert, not just the Mudman, but many others that the public has never seen, of similar, very strange images of people, apparently all deceased, who have been appearing on Robert's camera. In the analysis that we've conducted, we've been able to clearly demonstrate something that is even weirder than what the debunkers are asserting. The images are of the same individuals as are represented in various photographs. Robert had never seen them, and just so people know this, he didn't even have a computer at the time the Mudman photo occurred. He only got one a couple years ago. So he didn't even have a computer, so it's an absolutely moot point. But the work that we've done clearly shows that the images that have come on Robert's camera, although they appear to be of the same individual, also appear to be at a slightly different instant in time. The photographs do not match, and we're going to be able to clearly demonstrate that they do not match. They are not the same photos, but it is of the same individual in case after case after case, but apparently at a different instant in time than the actual photograph which is printed somewhere. So people will have to wait. I'm trying to get this report out by Christmas. If not, it will be certainly January. It'll be done. I have to show step by step by step exactly what we've done and exactly how we can prove this so that everybody can see what I'm talking about. And I don't think there's much point in going into it in depth before that report is out.
Okay, well, I tend to agree with that, but you will publish the analysis also?
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is going to bore people to death, but I'm going to do it.
Well, a lot of people will be interested to see that, I'm sure. One thing that, you know, that I have said when people have suggested that Robert was either, like, he was holding an image that in front of the lens that you said you had observed him many, many times and hadn't seen him do anything that even remotely would make you believe that he was holding something in front of the lens.
Angela, I watch him like a hawk. He, you know, he, believe me, I know I'm not as young as I once was. Some people think I'm an old bat. Okay, I'm telling you, my eyesight still works. And so does my brain. I am watching him. In the cases and all of these reports that I've put up, you will see that I'm dealing with the instances in which he is using my camera with me standing right there. The new report, the one about the UFO photos, is not just my camera, although many of the images there are taken with my camera. You will see in part one, the very first case I talk about seriously, Dr. William Roll, the very well-known American parapsychologist, was with us in Holland in 2008, and he had a brand new camera which he had bought for the purpose. It was not given to Robert until we went to a particular field one afternoon, and Roll took it out of the case. He set it in auto, just the automatic, you know, thing, which is what we always do, because Robert doesn't know how to mess with cameras. And then Roll and I and Robert walked out to the field, with Roll in this case watching him as intently as I was, and Robert then starts to take pictures. Now, do you really think that in broad daylight, the two of us watching him like hawks, we're not going to see something funny? Immediately, as soon as Robert started shooting, UFOs started to appear. That's simply what happened. We did not see them with our eyes. Robert didn't see them. Neither did Dr. Roll nor I. But those first batch of images did occur right in front of the two of us on Dr. Roll's camera, after which Robert handed it back. I mean, we all saw the images in the field. We saw them instantly, immediately after they were taken. Robert had not had access to that camera prior to taking the photos. How in the heck could he possibly have done it? It just doesn't make sense. Then if you go on farther in the report, part two, for instance, you're going to see a whole series of different possible UFOs. I don't know what they are. Dramatic, aerial light phenomena is perhaps as good a term as any. Taken over several different years, varying shapes, varying types, varying sizes. In this case, in part two, most of them are taken, again, with my camera. But I'm standing right there, and in some cases so are other people, watching him. My camera, whenever I'm in Holland, is kept in a locked case with me, and I hand it to him when he asks. He can feel the presence of an energy, and as he begins to feel it, he'll turn and ask me if he can have the camera. I take it out of the case, hand it to him, stand right with him while he then starts to shoot. His habit normally is to hold the camera out in front of him, you know, some distance, often with just one hand, sometimes with two, and click, 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 he'll take 5, 6, 7, 8 photographs, and then he stops, and we cluster around, and we scroll back through to see if anything has appeared.
Right.
He doesn't
know. If you definitely know that there is no way that he is holding an object in front of the lens to do this with. I mean, you're sure.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, think about it yourself. I mean, think about holding a camera that has just been handed to you with one hand out in front of your face 3 feet. I mean, how are you going to do it? Particularly when you've got people watching you. I mean, it's not just these few people that I'm reporting about. It's dozens and dozens and dozens of people have had this experience now for years. Robert has been taking these very unusual, highly anomalous photographs for more than 10 years. I mean, all this started when he was about 14. Mm-hmm. He has thousands. I'm estimating that in his father's archive, there could easily be 15,000 of them now. I personally have 3,000 or 4,000 right here that he's taken with my camera. The idea, and these images are all different kinds. We're not just talking light phenomena. We're not just talking UFOs. We're not just talking people who have died. We're talking all kinds of other things that I haven't even started to tell people about. The idea that he would be faking all this is just ridiculous.
One thing that someone in the chat room is asking me to please ask you is there any photos of the yellow UFO with the human-looking being?
No. Robert had, I'm going to post all this stuff as soon as I get some work done. Robert had suddenly needed, he wanted to get some cigarettes. He'd hopped on his motorbike and was heading up around the corner to a gas station to get his cigarettes. En route, there is a little road that goes off that main road that goes toward what Robert calls his special field. It's where the events first started many, many years ago, and he considers that place very special.
Uh-huh.
And as he was driving toward the gas station, he got this sudden total knowing, which is the best way I know to put it, to go to the special field. So he turned off and went down there. Didn't have a camera with him, you see, because he wasn't expecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawn what it looked like for me. I have a very good diagram illustration now of the inside. He's drawn what the being looked like. We have photographs of this strange stone that was handed to Robert. There, we're trying to get some work done on identifying the stone. There has been a subsequent event in which a white powder has appeared again. That has already been analyzed. It's the same magnesium carbonate as we've seen many times before. But now we're going to try and get DEM work, which is transmission electron microscopy, done on the white powder, to look and see if possibly the crystalline structure of the nanoparticles in this powder, whether they might be different. We don't know. It's been suggested. And if they should be different from the the human-made magnesium carbonate, then we could show very clearly, you see, a difference. One of the big problems with anything as outrageous as this case is coming up with intelligent questions, even knowing what to ask, you see. I mean, we're all dealing with something. We don't know what's going on, and so it's very hard to come up with good questions that our modern technology could possibly even answer.
Well, if the crystalline structure is different, what does that say?
What it would indicate, if in fact it is different from the magnesium carbonate that the humans produce, and it's different enough, it simply indicates is it doesn't match the normally manufactured substance. Now,
so
Comes from somewhere else or not, a lot of people have this idea that you can do an isotopic analysis and automatically prove whether or not a substance is earthly. There's a huge amount of misunderstanding about that. And if, in fact, the entire universe, our universe, is made up of all the same stuff, one doesn't necessarily expect that we're going to come up with a substance that is markedly different from what would be found perhaps on Mars or Saturn or anywhere else.
When will this test be done?
Well, I've called the guy who is capable of getting it done, and transmission electron microscopes are very expensive. Only the major universities have them, or some of the big material science labs have them too. But we're going to use probably the one at Stanford, and we have to get on a waiting list, which he's going to do for, you know, time to use the machine. And I don't yet know exactly when that'll be.
Wow. Well, we'll all be anxiously waiting for that.
You're
That's very interesting.
We're kind of curious, too. Angela, if it's possible,
yeah.
If people are looking through this report, there's an item in particular. This is one. This has happened many times now, but I've only talked about one incident of it. It's in part two. And it is about halfway down, part two. And it was an incident that occurred in 2008. And Robert and I, on this particular night, just so people understand, Robert sleeps very late, and so do I. We go out in the afternoons, and then we're frequently, often up all night. It's a very common thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't normally go to bed till 4 or 5, sometimes 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
So being up late at night it's nothing abnormal. This particular night, this is in 2008, and it was probably around 11 o'clock. We probably just arrived. And we were again at this field that Robert calls his special field. where the events first started happening to him. And it was cold that year because I was there late. And we were sitting in the car and just talking. And Robert was discussing a color. I mean, honestly, if you could hear some of our conversations. Anyhow, we were talking about color. And he was talking about a particular lovely blue that he sees in his mind's eye when he experiences what he calls presence of a Mary energy. He means the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And his understanding of that, he's not formally religious at all, but he understands the idea of the Virgin Mary as something very sweet, very loving, very gentle.
Why?
And periodically, he will experience an energy present that feels like that, and he's labeled it for his own purposes as the Mary energy. Whenever he has that particular experience, he then, in his third eye or mind's eye, sees this color blue, and he loves it. He thinks it's beautiful. I was, on the other hand, talking about an aqua color that had appeared in one of these weird square things in part two at the beginning, in other words, in the second thing in there. You'll see that I've shown a whole series of this weird-looking rectangle-shaped thing that in the first couple shots had aqua and white light balls in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the aqua color was beautiful. And so the two of us are just talking. I mean, how in the world two adults can do this? But we're doing it. We're talking about these colors. He then, all of a sudden, gets the feeling that something is getting ready to happen, and we get out of the car, and he asks for my camera, and I hand it to him, set in auto, as it always is, and he starts to take pictures. What happened absolutely flabbergasted me. A brilliant, brilliant, no shape to this, it's just a sort of a round, brilliant white light, around which is an aqua-colored ring. Around that is a blue, a beautiful soft blue, fuzzy blue stuff. That image came over and over and over and over, 20, 30, 40 shots right in a row, over and over. Now, he and I had just, nobody else was with us. There's nobody within a half a mile of where we were. Nobody could have heard us. I mean, that's what we were just talking about, those two colors. And here comes this whatever it was reflecting back precisely the two colors that we had just been discussing. Now, I don't know what somebody else is going to make of that, but I know what I felt. It's like, oh my God, something is hearing our conversation. Heard what we've just been talking about and is deliberately reflecting those colors back to let us know. Now, you know, you can say I'm crazy, but that's what I felt. I mean, I know what we were talking about, and I know what the photos subsequently showed. Now, this sort of situation where something that we've talked about immediately then subsequently appears on the camera has happened many times now with me and Robert, many times. I'm going to write a whole report on that one of these days, all these different instances. But after the many times it has happened, I've gotten to the point now where it seems to me more likely than not that, again, there is a consciousness of some sort present and paying attention. And on top of that, capable of producing an image that is directly related to whatever we were just talking about.
Well, that's very strange. Because you would have to believe, you know, that this consciousness, or I don't know what to call it either.
I call it a consciousness because it exhibits the same criteria we'd apply to consciousness generally. I mean, it does stuff that indicates it's aware. If it's aware, it's conscious. I mean, you can call it anything you want. I don't know what the correct word is, but consciousness works for me, so I use it, but people can call it anything they like. I mean, something which has a physical capability, in this case, to influence a camera. In other cases, to do other things. But in this
and
case,
obviously, you know, that couldn't have been something that Robert would have hoaxed, because he wouldn't have known you were going to have a conversation about colors.
No.
So how could he put that on the
And even
on the
if
camera?
He did know, if he planned, let's say, to have a conversation, he'd have never known that I was going to go with aqua.
Right.
So,
and then those two colors show up
over
and over
and
over.
And over. And bright, that thing was so bright. I mean, remember, we don't see a thing with our eyes. Oh, he was first, he was shooting, now I guess in this case he was shooting away from the car, down this pathway that runs alongside the special field. And in some of these images, the thing, whatever it is lighting up the whole path. The flash on the camera won't do that. It extends maybe 30 feet. This thing is lighting up the whole darn path. And yet we can't see it with our eyes. Either one of us.
Well, I have some people in the chat room now. I know two of them are friends of mine. They're both chemists. And is the machine that you were talking about a TEM?
Correct.
For the crystalline structure?
Correct.
Okay, they are saying that those machines are common now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the material science guy I use is in a laboratory on the West Coast. We've used him before. And I think he uses the machine at Stanford. He also has access to one at Berkeley. And we don't have a huge amount of money, so we go with the least expensive option. I mean, remember, this stuff, it's very expensive what we're doing here. So I'm going with the least expensive way. And if they've got a real cheap, even cheaper way and all the right credentials, well, I can talk to them.
Okay, because they're saying that they can get it done quickly, and, you know, one of them is retired from a lab that I
right.
know. He's a friend of mine. He's a good friend of mine. He did the...
Tell them to get in touch with me after, or give me their phone
okay.
numbers after, and I'll call them.
Okay, well, that sounds great, and I'm sure that they'll be interested in talking to you.
All right, now, in part three of this new report,
mm-hmm.
the UFOs photos report, one point that needs to be made is that Robert has been fairly consistent in this particular case, in these photos, that
uh-huh.
he believes that these photos represent what he's calling a cosmic energy that he believes is being projected through him as a medium onto the camera, and that whatever this energy is can project any image it wants. And if you, like I, had seen these thousands of images that have occurred, you'd understand why he thinks that. But he thinks that the UFO image in particular may be being utilized now because UFOs are almost unilaterally, internationally recognized as representing other, you know, not here, from somewhere else or from something else. In other words, they immediately suggest to lots of people, probably a majority of people, the other. And he believes that this energy which is coming around him and through him is, in fact, of the other. And in his case, he believes it is a spiritual other. And that, therefore, using the UFO image is not necessarily because it means to talk about UFOs, although the hearts that had the UFOs in them make me think maybe that's wrong. But more that the idea is simply to get across the point to the general public that something otherworldly is in fact going on.
Well,
now in part three,
it's just so hard to think of it that way. And I want to clarify for the listeners, when you're saying the UFO image, and in case they haven't seen the pictures, what's being referred to is actually a saucer-type aircraft that we have shown
you.
UFOs.
Some
okay,
of which are in daytime, some of which are at night, some of which look solid, some of which look ethereal, some of which look like they're made up of all millions of little light bulbs. They're quite different and varied. In part three of this report, what's important about that part is that I have included there quite a few of these other people on whose cameras these images appeared this year. This year I was in Holland during the crop circle season. Normally I go at the end of it. This year I was there while the crop circles were happening in the field. And so Robert and I, when we would go to the fields at night, we would find regularly that there were quite a lot of other people there, some of whom we knew, some of whom we did not know. Mm-hmm. I, in many of those cases, was encouraging other people who were standing around with cameras to go up to Robert and give him their camera and then stand right with him while he then would use it. And mm-hmm. many of these people did that. And on many of these cameras, the UFO images, all different, by the way, but they then did appear. And it happened over and over and over with many different people. I didn't get all of their names, and all of the images that Robert took on many different people's cameras are not in the report, but there are quite a few of them with the individuals' names who owned the cameras and who were standing right there watching him while he did this. There was only one instance in the entire time that I was there that anyone with their eyes actually saw one of the UFOs. That was at Zevenbergen, my favorite field and the one where the hearts appeared, but at an earlier time. And there were a group of us there that first day, and Robert was getting these UFO images, and before he took one of them, Peter van Leerhoven, who's a local crop circle person in Holland, claims that he saw with his own eyes a hard-bodied, bluish UFO right behind Robert just a second before Robert took an image on which the UFO appeared. So there is possibly one eyewitness to an actual UFO, visual, UFO.
Other people were there and didn't see it.
No one else standing there did see it.
Now, about those heart photos, they do look, they have kind of a jagged edge to them. It looks like something cut out, and it looks exactly the same.
No, what they look like are little light balls. The jaggedy thing is caused by all the little light balls. They are, in my best guess, and this is often the case with some of these strange images, that the object is made up of hundreds or maybe even thousands of tiny little light balls. And when you put some of those pictures, I'm not very accomplished on the computer. I do have something called Photoshop Elements, and I know how to put autofix, on pictures. And I do that because it lets me see more. The MIT guy who's been working on the pictures of people who've died, he has a very sophisticated program, and when he does, tweaks the pictures, you can see always these tiny little light balls. And that's what you see sticking out around the edges. It's the little light balls.
Okay. Well, it looked a little jagged to me. That's why I didn't really... but, of course, maybe it's something about my computer, too. Every screen
is different.
Well, now,
are you thinking that this whatever this is that's doing it, that it... Maybe its taste is that it prefers it like that. How do we know?
We don't.
We have
no idea how Robert, you said that he feels this energy. He feels something.
He feels something
like
become around him. A presence is how he describes it, or an energy.
And is it different from the energy that he feels whenever he predicts a crop circle?
It can vary. I've asked him, I've been trying for years to get him to explain more clearly to me there are different energies which he perceives. It's not always the same. There is one that he clearly calls a UFO energy, and it's a much more strident kind of energy. Not aggressive, not something to, he doesn't feel any fear in its presence. But it's different clearly in his perception from the Mary energy. sometimes when crop circles are forming, and he knew this year, just like he has in every other case, he knows exactly when they're happening, and will draw pictures sometimes of what they're going to look like. He'll know where they're going to be, usually, almost always. And we have a guy now who is available to drive him. Robert will not go alone. And the reason he will not go alone is that he doesn't want to be accused of having anything to do with making the circles, you see.
Uh-huh.
And so either he waits and tells his parents and his father will go in the morning, or now occasionally he will go with this new friend and they can find it often in the evening. But himself, he will not go alone. It's too many people are willing to say he's doing it, you see. Now, it's funny that this summer there were quite a few that occurred in this one field at Standard Butin where many of those UFO photos were taken. There were four, I believe, that occurred in that one field. There were two that occurred in a field nearby. And there was another one which, when I was there, he knew it had happened, and he'd drawn a picture of it, but nobody could find it, including himself.
Uh-huh.
And when one afternoon we pulled away from the people and we were just driving along and we were looking for it. He had a general idea. And we drove back and forth up and down this road, and we were up slightly above the fields in this case. The road ran up high along the side. And I'm looking, I didn't see anything. I just didn't see a damn thing. And suddenly he yells, you know, stop the car, stop the car. And he was pointing down the field and telling me that's where it was. And I'm looking, and I don't see anything. So we park the car and go down the hill and walk through the field, and sure enough, you know, we go right, there it is, exactly what he'd drawn that had happened a couple days earlier. I've never seen him make a mistake. If he says it's happened, and he says it's going to look like whatever, it has happened, it's where he says it is, and it's going to look like basically whatever he's drawn. I think, from the many other things in his situation, the out-of-body experiences, which one of which I described very carefully in the beginning of this whole report, the poltergeist-type activity, the what some people would call remote viewing, the ability to see and photograph regularly with his clients, people who have died, the UFO encounters, and he has had many of those, that all of this stuff is, and the crop circle situation, it's all related. I am slowly coming to the conclusion it is all bits and pieces of the same thing, because all of it is manifested in this one case. It all happens around Robert, and he never knows from one day to the next what's going to happen that day. Many times I have been with him, and he can feel an energy present, and we know that something, I know it's going to happen, so does he, but he'll have no idea what the image is going to be. No idea at all. And he'll jump, I mean, he'll be just as excited as a 5-year-old kid. When those hearts appeared, I mean, both of us were just blown away. You know, what in the world? We're in the middle of a, Zevenbergen is a long way away from anything. There's nothing nearby. There are no lights. It's a pitch-black field at night. And here come these brilliant hearts. I mean, you don't see a bloody thing with your eyes. And when he took the first four and then that beautiful light ship, then what happened afterward is something that regularly happens now. He took four or five more shots. They were simply black. Now, the flash, you got to remember, is going off every time. When
so
a flash
it should not
goes,
be black.
Of course it shouldn't be black. But when there's weird stuff going on, it's black. So there were, you know, then these three or four shots right in a row that they're black unless you put them in autofix, and then you can see a lot of light bulbs.
And I had read, also, I want to get this in. We've got about 4 minutes left, just to let you know. I had read that in your reports that Robert's parents were so worried about him that they took him for a mental evaluation when he was in his early teens, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what were they worried about? I mean, why were they so concerned?
They thought he was schizophrenic or something, you know? And I mean, they didn't know what it was. They just simply knew it wasn't normal. And they're very responsible people, intelligent. And it was the only option they could think of, that Robert had to be crazy. And so they admitted him for a serious evaluation. It took quite a long time. The psychiatrist determined that not only was he very intelligent, there was no pathology of any sort whatsoever. And he was sent home, and it was then that his parents, and in particular his father, began to adjust to the fact that this was all real. It's taken quite a long time.
Well, he's very intelligent, you know, the doctors said that.
Well, you know, talking to him, he's got a great sense of humor. He's funny.
But he doesn't work. He's not employed. Can you tell us about that?
He absolutely could not. He doesn't live in the world that you and I do. He can live in it, and when you meet him and you have perfectly normal conversations, you might not know that there was anything unusual about him at all.
Uh-huh.
But his interest, his entire energy is absorbed by this presence. It is the only thing he is interested in, and when it is around him, which it is all the time, he can't pay attention to anything else. When you're having a conversation with Robert, to us it's all normal, those of us who know him, but
uh-huh.
Robert will break in the middle of a sentence and have a little conversation with whatever this is. He does it all the time. And then he comes right back to whatever it was you all were talking about and goes
on.
So
it's like he's speaking to someone that's not there.
Yeah. But it's not psychotic. I mean, this has been very carefully looked at. He's actually hearing and interacting with something on a level that is much more compelling and interesting to him than the normal everyday world. I don't think it's that he won't work. It's that his concentration will not stay. He couldn't stay in school. He can't tell time, for instance, because
he has
a strange dyslexic thing that goes along with this. He can tell one of the hands, I can't remember which, the other one, he can't get it straight at all. There are a number of things like that that he can't do that most people do fine. But many other things, like lots of other things, most other things he can do just like anybody else.
But and he doesn't drive?
No, does not drive a car. He has a motorbike, and he does drive that. For years and years and years, all he had was a bicycle, but he can drive the motorbike without any problem, but doesn't drive a car.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to have to close now. Is there one...
I just suggest that people who are interested in Robert's case, I have no reason to misrepresent anything. It doesn't do me any favors, and I wouldn't do it to Robert. All that I know or have been able to write so far is on his page, bltresearch.com/Robert, R-O-B-B-E-R-T. At the bottom of the introduction, there are a whole bunch of different reports, and if you read through them carefully, you'll begin to get an idea about what's going on with this guy.
Wow. Okay, thank you, Nancy. And I do encourage everyone to go and look at those reports. It is an interesting story, and I appreciate everyone in the chat room. All of my Open Minds Forums friends are there, and many other friends also. And I want to tell my listeners that... I'm not going to be around for a while, about 3 weeks, and as a matter of fact, I'm going in for surgery on Wednesday in Baylor All Saints in Fort Worth. So I'm going to be a little under the weather, I'm afraid, but my good friend Frank Warren is going to guest host the show for me next Friday night, and then we'll skip Thanksgiving weekend, and then fourth, Frank Warren will also be guest hosting, and then I will be back.
And we will all send you very strong vibes while you're out.
Well, thank you. That's what I want. I hope everybody will send me their good vibes, their healing energy, their prayers, or whatever it is that you do, and I'm sure I'll be fine. It's just going to take me a while to get better. And good night, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Joyner Report. Bye-bye.